Sounds to me like you're daunted. Say it again like you're undaunted.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, whenever you're watching this, whenever you're listening to this. This is the Often Daunted Podcast, and I am your host, Burke White. Thank you so much for joining me today. On this episode, I'll be recapping the USIE, yes, correct, University of Southern Illinois, Edwardsville, and the Eastern Illinois games. Following that, I'm going to be onto the Indiana news, as I am every episode. Then it'll be onto the national and conference news. After that, it'll be Burke's Big Five. This time, it's going to be Burke's Big Five Big Ten Associated Musicians, just some musicians that, I just ranked some of my favorite musicians associated with various Big Ten schools. Following that, it's on to the Flaunted and the Daunted for the week. You know, the winners and losers, who's winning and who's losing the week. After that, it's on to some of my thoughts prior to the tip-off with South Carolina. All of that on this episode. This is the regular format for the regular season episodes. I cannot appreciate you guys enough. I know I have cut the number of episodes, but I am trying to focus on the quality of episodes. I hope you enjoy this. If you haven't followed me across all socials just to get updates on when these new episodes come out, with their new release, I'm going to have probably one a week. Just wanted to, you know, have more time to be a good dad, good husband, and just wanted to focus on the quality over quantity. So again, it is going to be weekly recaps of whatever games we played, and we'll get into that today. If you haven't followed me across all socials, it is at Often Daunted. That is X, Instagram, whatever the case may be. If you haven't, please go follow at College Huddle. The College Huddle, awesome network of schools, just every single huge school you can imagine. They have a basketball and football representative. I am there representing Indiana for the basketball side, the Hoosier Huddle podcast. They are the football representatives for us. And it's awesome. Just been awesome getting to be on the Big Ten Huddle as much as I have, getting to go on other shows. And if you haven't, speaking of which, tomorrow, if you are watching this Thursday, the day of release, I guess, I will be joining JR on the Big Ten Huddle to discuss just some of the upcoming games of the weekend. Big weekend in Big Ten hoops, and I'll get on to it there. You can go check them out. But without further ado, let's just get into the episode. There's not much else to talk about. Let's go. All right, kind of the same setup as last week where I recap two episodes. I'm going to be recapping both of these together, sharing my thoughts over the last two games. Just working to get into the swing of it and the routine. So I truly, truly appreciate just you guys putting up with the growing pains, whatever the case may be, as I just find out the best way to present this. Right off the top, my player of the game for both of these games, Mackenzie Mbako. That brings the leaderboard. I am counting the exhibition games on who got player of the game in my books. I'm just telling you the player of the game right up top. The player of the game for both of those was Mackenzie. Mackenzie has two now. Miles has one, and Bryson has one. I am counting those exhibitions. With regards to how Indiana has handled these last two opponents, I just have to say, hey, we count our blessings when we can here. But from the top overall, you just wish these two teams didn't stick with us as long as they did. There's just far too much of the why the hell aren't we stomping these dudes out from the tip? Like, and that has been a reoccurring mentality that I've had watching this team start over the past few seasons. They start slow, and you saw it here, especially in that Eastern Illinois game. They started slow. They finished strong, but boy, did they start slow. My thesis for that Southern Illinois University of Edwardsville game is it just shouldn't be that hard. It shouldn't be that hard. Now, it wasn't nearly as bad as last season and how close these got, but still, we just got to spank these teams. We got to spank these teams from the beginning to the end. Like, that's how you move up in these computer rankings, and we have to make love with those numbers. We have to make those numbers work for us. We really do. The starting lineup for that SIUE game was the starting lineup we also saw in the game to follow. That was Miles, Kanan, Mackenzie, Malik, and Umar. As far as the first half of that SIUE game, as soon as the second lineup went in, Indiana allowed SIUE to keep it within four. For just far too much of that first half. McKenzie kept the Hoosiers in it like throughout that game until we just broke away to the until we started to break away after the 27-27 tie. McKenzie just rattling off 13 points to keep the Hoosiers alive, keep the Hoosiers in contention against a far lesser opponent at that point in time. But he was by himself at one point. He was tied with the SIUE Cougs after about the first seven minutes of play. Like, McKenzie, he's sprinting out of the gates of this season, picking up right where he left off, and then, like, I want to say, and then some, and then so much more. Indiana's 8-point lead heading into the half of that SIUE game. It was just a credit to everything McKenzie was doing on the production end of everything for Indiana and Indiana's free throw shooting. God, that was so awesome to see Indiana's free throw shooting be a benefit for us. Like, it's so crazy to think it has to be that hard. But again, to the thesis of all of it, man, it shouldn't be that hard, but it is sometimes. Indiana was able to close the first half with a 15-2 run, and you just saw, like, at that point, it seemed like the game was really going to get out of hand. And as close as they did keep it, we handled our business there. It was a good outing. No, I don't believe we moved down in the computers. We definitely didn't move up, just floating right where we were. That's what they expected from us, and we gave them the expectations. Now it's time to start beating those expectations. By the end of this game, like, McKenzie was able to lead the second half push and ended his career. He ended the night with his career high 31 points in this game. You just wish that anybody other than Mbako and Malik had taken it to another gear in that game. There's only, like, so much that we can do with the schedule. If you aren't making examples out of these teams, with the non-conference schedule Indiana has built, like, you have to trounce these teams. You have to decimate them. You have to leave zero question, zero doubt that you are a far superior opponent, and you have to make the numbers realize, oh, you were wrong. Like, that outing was so good, we have to move you up. We have to utilize these games beneficially. We can't just use these as opportunities to idly just skate through. We did that last season, and it bit us in the ass in the end. Yeah, you just wish that it seemed like McKenzie and Malik really had that gear going throughout the whole game. Really reliable throughout that USIE game. University of Southern USIE. Yes. Okay. USIE game. Huh. Just too many mistakes adding up, and if we allow that to carry on into the battle for Atlantis or any real competition whatsoever, any real opponent worth their weight, like anybody that we want to compete against, like those little mistakes are going to add up. The lapse in motor is going to bite us in the tail. It's just a whole, like, that game, regardless of the score, you just wanted it to tighten up a bit. A little more intention looked like it could have went a long way in that game. When I mean the intention, it was just 16 turnovers, like 16 offensive rebounds allowed. That's just low motor statistics right there. The defense and rebounding was just as a whole lackluster in that game. Tightened up in the second half, but just far too many open threes. Open threes. Are you sick of hearing me say open threes are the issue? Too many offensive boards for just an undersized team. It was rough on that end of the floor. You wish you could have seen Indiana's size, like, dictate those parameters accordingly. But, yeah, it was really, while we were giving them open threes, they only shot 20% from deep. And I just was thinking the whole time, man, another team is going to damage us for this. Another team is going to make us, they're going to kill us with that. And, yeah, that was just some of the gripes. Three-point shooting in this one. Three-point shooting in that USIE game, very promising. We can build on that. You know, 6-for-16 from deep. You want to see that volume go up. But ultimately, hey, that efficiency rating will inevitably build the confidence that will build the volume. I love where we are starting this year compared to where we've seen this three-point shooting be. And I am optimistic on where this could go. I find the three-point shooting outing so far, very promising. Free throws as a whole, just 14 for 17 in that game as a team. Incredible. I would have killed for that last season. We need to get the free ones. And glad to see Indiana was able to convert at a better rate here. Kanan, throughout that game, he struggled to get involved offensively, but he just looked to make it up elsewhere. He looked to make up for it elsewhere. He absolutely did. Despite the open threes from the backcourt, like, Kanan's energy was on display. It was on display on the defensive end, and he was active on the boards, grabbing six rebounds on that end, as well as dishing out three assists. Like, that, with the motor he's bringing, if he just... He has the skill to pay off that motor. Like, that'll pay dividends. It'll all come to fruition here shortly. I truly believe that. Balo just seems tense. He seemed tense in that game, or just something out of the gate, I guess. As many boards as he is getting, like, there are still some left to be taken by him. There really are. I hate to nitpick Balo. Like, I'm so pumped we got this guy. We need everything that we can get from him. It just seemed like he didn't seem to have the mitts for the ball in that game. I don't just squeezing it a little too hard, maybe. I don't know what the case was. We just need to find that gear, that gear that we so desperately went out searching for. Just that nasty bulldog down low. Luke, 0 for 3 in that game. 0 for 3 against the Cougars on the night. He's not sinking them, but I like his involvement in the offense. I like the shots he's been taking. They are the shots I want Luke Goody taking. When he's open from that range, take it. Keep taking shots, Luke Goody. That's my ultimate thoughts from in regards to Luke Goody. Last thing on the USIE game before I discuss a little the Eastern Illinois game. McKenzie was slept on last season. He was. The way it all ended, he was co-Big Ten Freshman of the Year, but the way he ended the season, if he could have done that for three, if he could have done that three games earlier, he would have been outright. I truly believe that. It's just, it's incredible to see that he is taking the sophomore leap, despite me thinking that there wasn't that much of a leap for him to take. It looks like he really is taking it with that 31 points in that game. But more impressively, it was the 4 for 5 from deep. McKenzie's converting at an 80% rate in the game while taking 5 shots from deep. He is just the bucket we need and every ounce of the producer that we will need him to be. In that game, it was cool to see Daryl honored with Kyle and the rest of the family in the house for that game. And yeah, credit to SIUE. My last note here, they played tough. They did. These guys love, they and of course they are. They're going to play their hearts out in Assembly Hall. And credit to SIUE for doing just that. All right, now for, let's discuss some thoughts regarding the Eastern Illinois game and my Eastern Illinois thesis. You know, two different teams, two different halves. That first half, absolutely pathetic. Pathetic first half, 37-36. I thought we were just going to finally start like running away with it when the Hoosiers hit the 27-20 lead with about 9 minutes to go in that first half. But boy, did they decide not to do that. Down the stretch of that half, they just give up the lead, and the Hoosiers are down going into the half against Eastern Illinois. That was absolutely, it was sluggish defense, open shooters, just uninspired rebounding, lame duck passes. There was one by Trey in the first half where he tried to hit Bryson in the corner at the top, open on the other side of the floor. It was just one of the lazier passes about halfway through the first. And that one just really stuck with me because it was our captain. No offense. I mean, God love Trey. We love Trey on this show, but it hurt to see the captain in that state, like right now, just idling through a game, coasting through a half like that. It felt like that watching him. Whatever the case may be, whatever Mike did at halftime, that wasn't, they definitely turned it around with a 24-2 run at one point to start the second half. It was just an entirely different team looking to run with purpose, looking to defend with purpose. I say that, but then also open shooter still. But I'm trying to look for, there. You get whiplash watching this team in this game. Like the juxtaposition between the quality and the caliber of play on the court that one team can have is jarring. It's alarming. You just need to, I don't know what it's going to take for Indiana to find the full 40, but man, God, this talent on this roster, if they can find the full 40, it's going to be something special. We saw what the 20 was in that second half. It was something special. If that second half bleeds into the first, we are sitting pretty, and that computer is helping us out. That computer is making the numbers dance in our favor. And, you know, if we take a few bruises in Big Ten play, we can survive it because we absolutely shredded them for 40 here. But, again, taking our foot off the gas out the gate, I just don't want it to bite us in the tail. I don't. And the more and more you leave these ones up to question, the more and more there is the opportunity that that's exactly what's going to happen. In that Eastern Illinois game, we were able to go 8-for-12 from the free throw line, which is, you know, that's far closer to what I'm accustomed to, going 66%, and fix that. Be more like the last game, 12-for-15, I believe I said. Let's try to get back to that clip. Miles was forcing the issue. In this one, I really felt like, especially in that first half, I mean, second half, not so much because we were just balling out in the second half. But when he was looking to do anything in the first, it just led, you just saw far too many errant dribbles and turnovers. And it's, yeah, I say forcing things, but then it was also just like, it was forcing it without the motor. It was a team-wide, yeah, just a team-wide case of the sads in the first. Everyone just was playing it sad. I don't get it. We can't have that. We definitely can't have that against South Carolina, who absolutely looks far better than they did in their opener against North Florida. But we'll get into that in the preview. Kanan, as he was in that first game, still finding it. But we got some serious progress in that regard with Kanan being able to go 2-for-4 from deep. Again, the effort that he brings defensively, it's going to pay dividends, and it's going to help him find his way on the offensive end. If he has the motor, I truly believe that he has the inherent skill to find his role, find what he needs to bring to this team to play a significant part, to be a significant, you know, contributor. In that game, Trey really showed the ball movement he brings with him off the bench. In this one, like he did the game before, of course. I think he had 8 assists in this game, 8 assists in 18 minutes, 9 assists in the game prior, 17 assists off the bench. What more could you ask for? Having that is the difference between this team and so many other teams. Having that depth, having 8 assists coming off the bench in 18 minutes. That's just truly, truly the distribution that we need from our captain here, coming off the bench. Bryson Tucker in this game. Bryson Tucker in both games. He just continues to be found money. He will be absolutely critical to this team's success when all is said and done. And I just look at Bryson Tucker and I'm like, this kid is a break in case your break in case of emergency option has failed. Option. Like, he is a fallback scoring option that we didn't even know we really had. But, man, now that it's revealed itself, I just am over the moon about it. He was able to have 20 minutes against Eastern Illinois. And, again, I cannot speak volumes to what I think this kid is going to mean for us by the season's end. What he will be able to do. There will be a Bryson Tucker game. I said that last episode. I'm going to say it again. And I'm excited to see it. Malik's development in this game and in the prior game, like it's jumping off the screen. He's such a force. His ability to tighten up defensively has made him available for massive minutes this season. And as far as Malik's abilities go, availability was the lesser of his abilities. He was able to cut that down. I think through two, he has 2.5 assist or fouls a game, and that's the same as his season average for his freshman season. And that's roughly with about half as many minutes that he was playing in that freshman season. So he has made these strides defensively to cut down the little things that ultimately kept him off the floor and ultimately hurt the Hoosiers, because when Malik Renew's not on the floor, the Hoosiers aren't their best. They aren't the best version of themselves, because Malik is one of the best Hoosiers. Balo's been hit or miss with the consistency he's bringing, but he was every bit of the monster we needed him here in the second half. With him, yeah, it's I'll discuss here when I sum him up, kind of, but yeah. McKenzie also in this one, just incredibly productive game, but in this one, he had a steal. Like, the defense stood out to me here in one play in particular. He had a steal that started a fast break that turned into a Miles Rice three-point shot, and then it got cleaned up by Malik Renew crashing the boards and putting it back for an and one. It was just awesome to see McKenzie is starting a break like this early into the season with just some solid on-ball defense, considering where we were this time last year. McKenzie and Bacco has made incredible strides defensively that have been able to, like, that have enabled him to just reveal what was his inherent offensive ability. And I'm just glad to see McKenzie doing it on both ends, finding a way to step up that defensive intensity. It's awesome to see him, like, committing to that, because I truly believe he is. He is making conscious steps in that regard. It's visible to me. Through these two games, summing them up both, the shots are falling from deep. They are falling. You know, maybe this level of an efficiency that everyone's complaining about the volume, but this level of efficiency can absolutely help to spark an increase in the volume. You know, that'll feed the confidence. That confidence will feed the volume. Indiana's been its most ineffective offensively. Just when we are starting to spam the front court over the top passing, that interior over the top, you know, try to get Balo on a one hop dunk or try to get Malik, whatever the case may be. You can see when Indiana's doing that, they fall into this mindset, and it's just the off ball movement comes to a scratching halt. Like, it's the other four guys just watching if Malik or Balo is going, or yeah, it's the other four guys watching if Malik is going to be able to make a spin hook shot, hook, left-handed hook, or if Balo is able to muscle it up and in. It's these lapses in movement. It speaks volumes to that Hoosier three-pointer volume taken. Like, when those four guys are watching the post guys, you know, go to work, try to put the force the ball into the bucket, we're not getting open shooters on the three, and that's hurting the volume. I think that's the argument I was trying to make there. All right. This time last year, like, we were screaming about open shooters. We were screaming about open shooters, and I'm not saying it's as bad as it was last season, but nonetheless, I'm still screaming about it here. There's just far too many open shooters. How is this the case? I don't know how this isn't addressed. I don't know how this isn't schemed out of whatever's going on. Why are there so many open shooters? Let's do something about it, Hoosiers. I truly believe we can. We have the talent. We have the physicality to. We just need the game plan and intention. So let's go get it. Trey having to be a point guard all last season is going to absolutely pay dividends here. I said he had 9 and 8 assists in each of these games. He did have that pretty horrible pass in that first half, but his vision has been unlocked just through that absolute trial of a season for him last season. And having that coming off the bench with the size he does, it's going to catch a lot of teams off guard. And Trey Galloway catching teams off guard wouldn't be the first time. And I'm certainly hoping that we see it far more far more frequently this season to come. Kanan hasn't truly found his footing, but his baseline intensity is apparent on the floor, and I trust that that'll figure itself out there, like by itself. Much better in that second game than he was in the first on the production, but yeah, if he keeps bringing it, like it'll find itself. Malik Renew is showing off his abilities and producing, but more importantly, he is showing off availability. I said it before, but fouls through two games, Malik has five. That 2.5 average matches his season average for his freshman season, despite roughly having half the minutes then. Wow, that's much more eloquent than how I chopped through it before. Balo, through these two games, Balo needs to find that fifth gear more frequently. If not, like, let's slide Malik down when needed. There's no need. There's no punishment or shade to Balo here. He's playing far more minutes than he ever played at Arizona. There's no shade whatsoever, but maybe we need to slide down Malik just to let him do more with less time. Let Balo do more with less time rather than having him do less with more time. I wanted to go get Balo so bad when he was in the transfer portal because that dude was a bruiser when we played him. Like that was the most lasting impression he's made on me. I didn't spend hours watching Arizona last season, but if we need to play him less minutes to get more out of him, to feel his impact on the game more, you know, violently, I'm all for it, whatever it takes. And McKenzie, as far as McKenzie goes through these first two, keep it up. Jesus, like, keep making the strides defensively so that we can maximize on everything that you give us offensively. And it's just incredible what he's done through these first two. 20 for 27 from the floor, 6 for 9 from 3, 49 points total. He is on fire. He is also leading the team in rebounds. McKenzie and Bacco ain't long for the Hoosiers, but boy, am I glad we got him while we do. All right, yeah, that was me recapping it, basically just providing any and all notes, side thoughts, whatever the case may be, during that game. So with that down, let's get on to the Indiana news. Starting off your Indiana news, Indiana ranked number 5 in the latest AP poll, the latest CFP poll for the college football playoff. And incredible. You hosting Bama would be quite something. Having to see them go to a stadium half the size of Bryant-Denny or whatever Alabama's is in the cold makes for a nice picture. Of course, you know that isn't going to be how this all shakes out. There's just so much time left between now and the college football playoff. But that being said, Cignetti and the Hoosiers continue to do their thing and absolutely shock every single one of us as they do the impossible, take Indiana to a college football playoff. God speed, gentlemen, keep it up. Also on IU football, I'm just on it, Pam Whitten and Scott Dolson are currently engaged in mapping out both funding and planning for Memorial Stadium renovation, and that is per Zach Osterman with the Indy Star. You heard Cignetti. I mean, we kind of thought half joke about adding 30,000 seats to the stadium. Seems like it may be far less of a joke. And Indiana needs some more seating. Like, if this football team's going to be this good, I just went and checked the Bucket game tickets. They're up to like 325 for some nosebleeds. That's how crazy it's getting in Bloomington. Used to go to football games because you couldn't afford the basketball games, and this is where we're at. Nonetheless, it's awesome. Just keep doing it. You know, I'd rather cheer for an expensive winner than a cheap-ass loser. So keep it up, guys. Let's see these renovations come to fruition as this just keeps rolling along. Never lose again, IU. There you go. While I'm getting on to the non-basketball, I'll get it all out of the way here. IU men's soccer, who shared the Big Ten title, as I announced last time, after they had a perfect October. They lost to the 7-seeded Michigan in the first round of the Big Ten tournament as they were the 2 seed, 1-0. And with that, I mean, they'll be in the NCAA tournament because they were able to get a share of the Big Ten. That means something. So while their season isn't done, shame to see them wash out of the Big Ten tournament so quickly. Now, on to basketball. IU basketball now ranked number 16. And that number 16 ranking, that's right where I want to be. That's right where I want to be. Right in the cut. You know, let's navigate this non-con with ease, then make the push. I like 16. Leaves us room to grow. And I don't have to watch over. You don't have to be watching over your shoulder at 16. We can chill here for now. Congrats to Trent Sisley and welcome to the crew. As Wednesday, it was announced that Trent Sisley had officially signed his NLI. You know, yeah, I want to say, oh yeah, that's awesome. But we've all seen NLIs be less than, you know, less than cemented. So that being said, no expectations for Trent Sisley to do anything but rock the candy stripes for the rest of his life. So, congrats to Trent Sisley. And, yep, that's a win for the Indiana recruiting. On Indiana recruiting, reported last Friday by Zach Osterman, can confirm Adam Howard, who was named assistant director of recruiting and operations for IU basketball in July, has been let go. Howard has been with the program for several years since his days as a student manager, #IUBB. And I wanted to bring this up. If you are watching the show, you know of the news, but I just wanted to say, let's not freak out, okay? Let's not freak out. If something needed shaken up within recruiting, it needed shaken up within recruiting. Seems like the fans who see this and who are yelling about it and who are the most upset with Woodson firing him, seems like those same people who are screaming so aggressively about it are the same people who would be screaming about not getting Braylon Mullins and not getting, you know, the in-state talent. Seems like that they would be the same section of that Venn diagram. And I just have to say, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Like, do we need to make changes to what's going on in recruiting, or are you really pissed with everything going on in recruiting? So, yeah. But that's none of you guys watching. If you watch this, you're cool. You're one of the good ones. John Fanta included Miles Rice in his top 25 players to watch in college basketball. That is both men and women's, placing Miles at number 15. And in regards to that, he had said, Mike Woodson has a high-level point guard in Bloomington, and Hoosier fans are dreaming of a Big Ten title and Sweet 16 run this year. Rice, a Washington State transfer who averaged 14.8 points, 3.8 assists, and 3.1 rebounds this past season, is a multi-skilled lead guard who will be a critical to Indiana's success. Umar Ballo is a preseason All-American in my book and one of my favorite players in college hoops, but I am giving Rice the nod because of his importance to this team. And absolutely, I said the same thing on the Big Ten Huddle when JR had me on to discuss preseason, you know, awards, superlatives, all that kind of stuff. I had said, like, if there is going to be an MVP of this Hoosier team and we have all the success that I truly hope that and think that this team can have, if there was an MVP, it was going to be Miles Rice if this team was good, if this team was a competitor, because what he will do to the backcourt will make it look so aggressively different than the Indiana of old, the Indiana of the last 2 years, where yeah, you couldn't help but give him the MVP. I thought that to be the case. But honestly, right now, it's McKenzie and Bacco. Just the walking bucket obviously has to be the most valuable at this point. Yeah. In 49 states, on to the next story. Sorry. In 49 states, it's just campaign finance. From John Webb of the Evansville Courier and Press, Evansville. Former Vanderburg County Commissioner Ben Shoulders used tens of thousands of dollars in campaign money to buy baseball cards and basketball season tickets, among other purchases, and then tried to report the expenditures as fraudulent in an effort to recoup some of the money, Evansville police say. According to a probable cause affidavit filed in Vanderburg Circuit Court late Wednesday, Shoulders spent more than $41,000 on eBay purchases using a debit card assigned to his Shoulders 4 Commissioner account. He would then list the buys on his campaign finance forms as something else. Signs was actually a 235 Johnny Bench rookie card, the affidavit says. Banner was a $570 Satchel Paige card. Police also obtained records from Shoulder's email address that allegedly shows confirmation emails for a $3,000 purchase for the 2020 to 2021 Indiana University men's basketball season tickets. So, yes, campaign finance in Evansville. Being fun, you know, some of that money going through the Hoosier pockets right there. I just wanted to bring up the story too. Yeah, campaign finance fraud for Hoosier season tickets. I've seen people do less. I've seen people do more for sure. Just a few more here for the Indiana news. Upland tweeted Friday, this is real, for real this time. Upland Brewing Company by Shaloubies. The Shaloubies Sloppy Pilsner will be available for purchase at the Upland Bloomington Brew Pub location. All proceeds will go to support the at Hoosier Hills Food Bank. Cheers. And awesome to see just how fervent Indiana football has made our community, our fan base, our just us. This is crazy. They made a beer based on a very real restaurant that has been a part of all of our lives. If you've ever been on campus, Shaloubies. So, it's just such crazy times we live in that this can also happen so quickly. Like how it's wild, you know. But God, I love our fans. I love it. I love IU Internet. I do. Dickie V announced his preseason low post enforcers, and I am bringing this up on the Indiana section because Indiana is included on it. Let me read this as Dickie V. Hold on. Let me get in character. Okay. This is Dickie V's low post enforcers, baby. I'm reading his writing on ESPN, and this is what he had to say about the low post enforcers. And let's not forget about the big boys down low. Dominating the paint, baby. It's an art form. You need the length and the length to have success, baby. Check out these big men who will be controlling the paint this year. Hunter Dickinson, KJ Adams, Ryland Griffin, Cooper Fleck, Umar Balo, McKenzie Mbako, Malik Renew, named to Dickie V's low post enforcers list. I felt like I had to, I have to do the Dickie V impression if you're reading Dickie V lists. Which, speaking of, I have to read his Marco Polo team. Dickie V's Marco Polo team. And if you wanted a little description on what the Marco Polo team consists of, here's my description. Here's Dickie's description in my Dickie impersonation. The impact of NIL is changing the game. Teams are finding it harder to keep their cool players, but that means more impact transfers. Here's my top transfers who are going to have immediate impacts. And Umar Balo was on that list. Sorry. Oh, that was my the Indiana news, and that was my Dickie V impersonation. So let's get on to the national news. Auburn's first attempt to leave Alabama for Houston on Friday was delayed after a fight between teammates on the plane forced the aircraft to immediately revert course and head back to the ground for safety. It was freshman forward Ja'Kai Howard and senior forward Jaheim Hudson, both of which had been left off the plane to make the trip once they had landed. That's just crazy. Everybody who's been fighting for Pearl, I mean, the team looked great after the fight, but I just cannot imagine our fan base reacting to hearing that news. I just wanted to bring it up because that's such a wild story. And I wanted to, you know, spin the idea of just what that would look like amongst us. We would be at each other's throats, which is crazy. If they were fighting, we would be at each other's throats, but that is absolutely what the case would be. Some more relevant news with Big Ten. Reported Monday, Illini wing Ty Rogers will not be playing tonight, and he met with Brad Underwood and has decided to redshirt this season. This follows in the steps of Sincere Harris just last year, who is now at West Virginia. He just did that last season. Seems to be recurring in the Illinois program now. Ty Rogers, he had a rough start to the year. Have to imagine that is playing into it. And yeah, Ty Rogers, probably, you know, they're saying, yeah, he's going to take a seat and learn and develop. But I have a feeling he's gone just as Sincere Harris was. News out of the rival camp, Purdue starting center Daniel Jacobson will be out for the remainder of the season after breaking his tibia. And you hate to see it. Truly, you never want to see, I mean, Purdue down bad through injury like this. You know, if I want to beat Daniel Jacobson, I want to beat Purdue with Daniel Jacobson. And I hope that this can heal well and we can have some actual battles with him as Purdue center. Out for the season, tough look, tough for Purdue to turn to somebody for some more minutes in an already pretty thin front court, a pretty thin and inexperienced front court. Ace Bailey has yet to make his Rutgers debut with an unspecified injury. You wanted Ace Bailey. You wanted Ace Bailey, Rutgers. You sure you got Ace Bailey money, though? You sure you got Ace Bailey money, though? Yeah. It unspecified injury, missing two games, that super shady stuff. Just, I mean, yeah. As Rutgers, even if it is just crazy coincidence, if it gets what? Rutgers, the unexpected nature of you landing this guy and whatever the nature of the injury, the timing of it is bad. It's a bad look in the court of public opinion. Because I definitely seems like, yeah, crazy timing. I wanted to use this moment in the national news section to say Hunter Dickinson bias will never not amaze me. It's a phenomenon that I just truly don't understand. In my book, if you are such a defensive liability in crunch time that we have to sub in a true freshman for your super ultra mega COVID senior season ass, you have to drop at least 50 points a night to be a damn near unanimous preseason All-American. The nation just thought Hunter would figure it all out on the defensive end in year six, which if you didn't notice, he didn't make the strides in year two through five. What the hell was he going to do in year six? I just cannot. I will never get it. Dude can make a hook shot. Dude can take a baseline jumper, and there's literally so many more parts of basketball. But yeah, All American. Not Big Ten news, but let's just talk about Todd. Yeah, the Todd Golden story is absolutely bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers. You know, it's not illegal. Whatever, I don't think, unless he sent something very, inappropriate. But it's absolutely condemnable through the court of public opinion, like being a creep, absolutely condemnable. Like, apparently just wrapped up in stalking and sexual harassment allegations, like Florida coaches right now. Sheesh. Florida athletics is in a rough spot, and I can't imagine they can forward firing both these guys. And these were the guys who wanted to hire Kurt Cignetti. Get out of here. That fan base is delusional. This week, the first weekly awards for the Big Ten season were announced, with the player of the week going to Nick Martinelli. Nick Martinelli of the Northwestern Wildcats. He was able to tally 29 points on 75% shooting from the field in this last week, including a 5-for-5 from three-point range game and a 12 rebounds in the other. He paired 32 points and 14 rebounds in a 71-66 loss at Dayton. And this was his first Player of the Week award in the Big Ten. The Freshman of the Week went to Will Riley from Illinois, the forward, 6'8". He averaged 22.5 points and 7 rebounds in the Illini's 2 wins last week. broke the Illinois freshman scoring record with 31 points on 10 for 13 shooting, including 5 for 6 from three-point range, in a 112-67 win over Eastern Illinois. Jeez, I thought I was broken there for a second. All right. Opening week thought. I took these notes while I was just watching the opening games, and just opening week thoughts for you here. Other conferences suck too. Okay, the Big East start was abysmal. Providence holds off Central Connecticut by 4 points on opening night. DePaul beats Southern Indiana by 2 points in overtime. Columbia beats Villanova by 10. Austin Peay beat Butler. Fordham beat Seton Hall. Villanova gets beat again by St. Joseph. Like, the Big East sucks, okay? And unless UConn is winning the title for the third year in a row, which they very well could, like, I'm out on the Big East. I'm out. And speaking of other conferences that I'm just out on, for a whole lot of talk, the SEC sure did struggle on opening night. Number 13, Texas A&M lost to UCF. Number 19, Texas falls to Jake and the Deeblers. Well done to Ohio State, man. Coming out of the gate, representing the Big Ten well, punching that SEC team in the face. Missouri falls to just the administrative trash fire that is Memphis. Georgia just barely squeaks it out over Tennessee Tech. Rough day for such a loaded conference, you know. Just rough opening for those two conferences. And they, they just want to shit on the Big Ten routinely, and then just abysmal outings from both those conferences in my mind. Big Ten used to, you know, I used to touch on each of the Big Ten games since the last recording on the episodes. Now that there's 18 teams and I'm doing one a week, that is a pretty unmaintainable. But I thought whatever games were worth sharing and need to be on the radar, I thought I'd select those ones and some results from them. So since our last time of recording, yeah, you all heard about Derrick Queen's game. Derrick Queen was dominant with a 20-point, 20-rebound debut in Maryland's win against Manhattan. And with that, awesome that he had that game against Manhattan, but I'm still convinced him and Julian Reis just will not work in the Big Ten. After their rough exhibition, Illinois debuted with a 112-67 win over Eastern Illinois. Freshman Will Riley, that was the one he had 31 points in. Illinois then beat SIUE soundly 90-58, beating both those opponents by more points than we did. More impressive margins for the Illini than the Hoosiers, and just a bummer to see. That is just, again, speaking to, let's come out of the gate ready to go. One season, please. Freaking stomp these teams from tip to whistle. Please. Purdue struggled against Texas A&M Community College. Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Sorry. CC is all I wrote down. There was way more to that game than the final score would tell you. You know, Corpus Christi outscored Purdue 46-38 in the paint. That's something. This is a different Purdue than we have seen in the Zach Edey era, and they are having to learn how to replay basketball in that regard, honestly, because Zach just changes the game that much. That being said, if there is somebody to help you learn it, Matt Painter is probably a decent teacher in that regard. UCLA beat Rider 85-50. No real thoughts on that game, still eh. But I just wanted to bring up that one to say they followed that up. The West Coast contender followed that up with a loss to New Mexico, 64-72. Speaking of West Coast, you know, standouts, West Coast teams looking to take this conference by storm. Great Osabor debuts with a double-double as the Huskies barely get the win at home, 79-73 over UC Davis. He had then followed that up by losing to Nevada 53-63 in a game in which Great Osabor, again, his name is Great Osabor. Great Osabor finishes 0 for 7 from the floor with 3 points in that game. This is your $2 million man, Great Osabor. playing like below average also board. Last weekend or last West Coast game of note, was that Oregon game. Oregon trailed Torvik ranked 281 Portland at the half Tuesday night, 23-31. And wow, you know, Portland did, they kept the lane lead through most of the game. The Ducks were able to tie it in the end, taking the game to overtime and needing that overtime to get the 80-70 victory. Rutgers was able to beat Wagner 75-52. Again, Ace Bailey was out for the first game for the Scarlet Knights, and they were able to win the game to such a degree, that 23-point victory, largely in part to holding Wagner scoreless for 11 minutes in that one. Truly credit to them. They're a young team getting it all together, figuring it out, but being able to solidify on the defensive end to that extent, impressive from Rutgers. Then Rutgers nearly lost to St. Peter's Monday as Ace Bailey was just still unable to go in that one. Again, unfortunate timing if it isn't NIL related, because it really feels like it might be NIL related based on timing. Michigan fell to Wake Forest after being so high on themselves last week. Northwestern lost to Dayton 71-66. So Martinelli player of the week, despite losing to an A-10 team. Juwan Gary had 11 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 steals in the Huskers' victory over Bethune-Cookman, 63-58. Again, that is a close one to Bethune-Cookman. And Nebraska, that ring-mast injury, it's just in that, as soon as you heard that, their season was a wrap. There was no time to go get a new center. Especially a center with the distributive like capabilities of him. He did so much to, you know, get the wheels moving for that Nebraska team. And yeah, less than stellar result with that 63-58 win over Bethune-Cookman. Michigan State lost to Kansas, number one Kansas, 77-69. Both sides missing plenty, just in a slow start. Michigan State showed some of the fight, but the front court was just destroyed by Hunter Dickinson. Kansas shot horribly, and despite how close it may have been, my opinion on Sparty, it just hardly changes here. Following that game, Bill Self became the winningest coach in Kansas history. Woohoo for him. Last one of note is the Tennessee game. Tennessee beat Louisville 77-55. I just wanted to throw this one in as a barometer from our scrimmage with them. Take from it what you will, whatever. All right, yeah. With all of the Indiana news out of the way, the national news, let's get on to the flaunted and the daunted for this week. All right, first up is your flaunted. These are just individuals who have won the week in the Big Ten, who have won the week in college basketball, who have just won, okay? These are winners in my book for the week. Kurt Cignetti, again, he is a staple on the flaunted list. Kurt Cignetti, I, you know, it wasn't our most impressive victory. It was a great opponent to finally beat. God, I love beating Michigan in football. It's a great feeling, no matter how many you beat them by. But Kurt Cignetti, I want to say he's flaunted for having the Hoosiers at 10-0 for the first time in school history. Hoorah, good work. But more so, he's flaunted because what I truly believe he can do with 2 weeks with that tape. Indiana was absolutely spanking teams. There was no adversity they had come across in their 9 wins en route to that Michigan game. And they finally got some. They were able to get the win. But more importantly, they were able to get valuable tape. We were able to put on tape the airs, stuff to, you know, address. And 2 weeks with Cignetti being able to mold that over. Good luck, Brutus. We're absolutely going to win that game. Your next up on the flaunted is Mackenzie Mbako. Career high in his season debut. Picking up where he left off with the Big Ten Freshman of the Year campaign. Follows it up with 18 points in the next game. An absolutely laid-back assassin, Mackenzie Mbako, flaunted. Also flaunted the second-half Hoosiers. I wanted to just put the 40-minute Hoosiers here once. I'm saying the second-half Hoosiers are flaunted because the first-half Hoosiers in that Eastern Illinois game were quite daunted. But luckily, they were able to address that at the half. Lastly, on your flaunted list, I'm going to put somebody who isn't a Hoosier. Yeah, I'm gonna go in the conference, and I'm going to put Jake Diebler on here. Ohio State University looks good, and they sprung onto the rankings this week, beating Texas, then destroying Youngstown. Bucky looked good. Or Brutus, sorry. God, Bucky Badger, Bruce Buckeye. There we go. Brutus looked good. Now for your daunted. Starting with the daunted, it's easily the team that's had the most daunted week in the whole country. It has to go to Villanova. Upset game one of the year by Columbia, 80-90. Kyle Neptune cannot be long for that job. Not like Columbia was lights out. They were 8-for-24 from deep. They followed that up with another loss to St. Joseph's. Like, Villanova's just in a free fall, and Kyle Neptune and them are absolutely daunted. The most daunted program right now, I'd have to say. Also daunted is Michigan football. Michigan football. Moore was born in the clubhouse after dad hit the game-winning homer on steroids with a corked bat, you know, with the cheating and all. Hashtag extend Moore, hashtag cry Moore. Michigan football, you daunted as hell. Also daunted, Florida Athletics. Can't fire Napier. Your other guy's getting harassment rumors against him. It's just a tough, tough week for Florida Athletics. Daunted. And lastly, of course, they haven't done anything to remove themselves from this list. Purdue football, 45-0, lost to Ohio State. Ryan Walter still there. Purdue football, still on the daunted list. Honestly, there might be a correlation between Ryan Walter's proximity to West Lafayette and their proximity to remaining on this daunted list. So, with all of those out of the way, let's get on to Burke's Big Five for the week. All right, it is Burke's Big Five, and this week we are talking Burke's Big Five musicians connected to Big Ten universities. These are just loose connections in that I Googled them. I just wanted to look at artists who kind of have loose affiliations with Big Ten universities, and I wanted to pick some of my favorites that, you know, stuck out to me. So number five, I'm going to go with Madonna, really having a renaissance with the Deadpool movie coming out. That choral version of that song is beautiful. It's such an inappropriate song to have such a beautiful version of, but nonetheless, yeah, Madonna with a connection to University of Michigan. I believe her daughter is there right now or just recently graduated, something like that. But she also attended there. Madonna, number five, University of Michigan. Number four, and a new movie coming out soon here. Bob Dylan, number four, with the University of Minnesota. Timothée Chalamet will be playing Bob Dylan in that movie to come up. And I really, really think that it's going to ruin like one of my favorite songs. The moment that everybody gets on like a Rolling Stone, which they will, they absolutely will as a result of this movie, it's going to ruin it for me. You know, I hate to be one of those guys who thinks he's cooler for listening to Bob Dylan, but I am one of those guys who thinks I'm cooler for listening to Bob Dylan. So number three, Eddie Vedder, Northwestern. Eddie Vedder, Chicago through and through, Pearl Jam. Eddie Vedder, number three. Number two, Prince, also tied to the University of Minnesota. Prince grew up in Minneapolis and was a huge Golden Gopher fan. Number two, Prince. Just Prince is the best. But, I mean, the only one better and pretty closely tied to Indiana. Never went there, but played his ass off in the bar surrounding it, John Mellencamp. I'd argue he is one of the most American artists out there. You think about Americana music. I would say John Mellencamp is right up there. Hoosier through and through. Number one, John Mellencamp. All right, let's get on to the preview, and then we'll get you out of here with a Hoosier. Yeah, let's get on to the preview. Saturday, 3 p.m. on Peacock, or the Cock, as the kids call it. We will be taking on the South Carolina Gamecocks. That is the number 50 currently ranked on Torvik, South Carolina Gamecocks. They are currently ranked number 60 with that adjusted offense and 53 with that adjusted defense. They are currently led by returning SEC Coach of the Year Lamont Paris. Last season, Lamont Paris got at South Carolina to an unexpected sixth seed in the tournament. And just following that breakout season for the program last year, there was a miserable debut for the South Carolina Gamecocks in their season opener, losing to North Florida 74-71. They were able to follow that up with a victory over South Carolina State 86-64. They were able to get out to the quick lead there, and they just held the distance thoroughly throughout the entirety of that one. And you saw that they're getting their legs together. They're finding a way to be a little more cohesive in that second game. But by the third game, they really recalibrated their expectations and got things on track after they were able to just eviscerate the 7.5-point line that Vegas had given them against Towson. They had them as 7.5 favorites. They end up winning that game by a just resounding 36 points. And beating the spread by that much, that'll recalibrate the computer numbers a bit. Key players in this one, key players for the Gamecocks are going to be preseason All-SEC selection Colin Murray Boyles, who was able to lead the Gamecocks with 17 in their loss to the North Florida Ospreys, going 7-for-16 from the floor. The 6'7 forward is their for sure first go-to bucket getter, and he was able to feast in that last game that they had against South Carolina State, able to feast even more so against Towson, going for 27 points on 9-for-12 from the floor, 9 rebounds, 1 assist. This guy is a difference maker. Preseason all SEC. SEC is a pretty good conference this year, or at least they think they are. And he is going to be the one to watch for in that front court. I believe our front court has the size, the skill, the everything to handle him. They just need to bring the motor. I am nervous about what Jacoby Wright could potentially do from the floor to Indiana in this one. Jacoby Wright, he's coming off of a game in which he went 4-for-7 from deep, 7-for-10 from the floor, where he dropped 20 points against South Carolina State. The 6'2 guard senior, that he can take advantage if Indiana is going to be leaving open shooters. That this is the guy that will kill us for that. 3-for-7 from deep, also ending with 16 points in that win over Towson. This is a guy to look out for, Jacoby Wright. Do not, like, as far as where their production is going to come from, it is the starting five. Do not look at that bench for significant threats. They utilize their starters for all production. If Indiana can work the ball inside and test Jacoby's defensive discipline, foul trouble is going to be kryptonite for the South Carolina team. That's just my, 10,000 perspective on it. 10,000 foot perspective on it. As far as what kills the Hoosiers, it's usually three-point shooting. And I really want to limit South Carolina's three-point shooting in this game. In their debut against North Florida, South Carolina got up 16 shots, sinking 5. In the game against South Carolina State, they got up 22 shots, sinking 8 from beyond the arc. Against Towson, they got up 21, sinking 6. Like, they are not great at shooting the three, but if there is one place where, like, a team usually has their shooting game of the year, it's Assembly Hall. I don't know which one of us kicked the witch or whatever the case is, but that place is cursed with that, I swear. Like, if we leave him open, he is going to they will make us pay. This is the type of team you're talking about when you're like, these are the teams that'll make us pay for that. As far as just what I want to see from the Indiana Hoosiers in this game, what do I want to see each of these guys bring? I want to see McKenzie just continue to produce at the level of efficiency that he currently is. I know, trust me, like I know that it truly isn't sustainable at the current level that it is, but let's keep it rolling as we can. Let's keep as much of it as possible. In this game for Balo, I want to see Balo fight Colin Murray Boyles and just anyone else who thinks they're trying to grab a rebound. I want to see a high motor, even if it means I get to see that motor a few less minutes than I would if, we got the same motor for longer. We have size down low. We have the talent to come off the bench. We should never be sacrificing energy on the floor. that this team's just too deep for that ever to be the case. As far as Miles Rice, I want to see Miles continue to flash his ball movement, his playmaking, and I want to see him hunt for himself a bit more than he had in the Eastern Illinois game. I feel like he had a much more aggressive but also more thought-out game plan, like for attacking the rim during the SIUE game than he had in that Eastern Illinois game, and I want to get back to more of that. It was in that SIUE game, his body control in the air, it was on full display. He was looking for how he was going to dance on in route to the rim. And I want to see more of that in this one. I want to see Kane and Carlisle continue to bring like that baseline intensity, even when just those around him may not. Like, go get you some, Kanon. Let's get the lid off this thing. You just keep bringing that intensity and the rest will figure itself out. As for Luke, good. For Luke, I just want to see him doing more of the same. I want to see him continue to take shots because we need to see those shots go in. We eventually will. It's Luke good. He converts at far too great a rate for that to be the case, unless that witch's curse is just far too strong. Malik, as for Malik, I want to see, like, they have some big men who can shoot the three. We need Malik on the floor producing. Don't close out like a rhino. Keep utilizing those small steps in just the minute little details defensively that you've taken those strides. Keep them up. I want to see more of that. I want to see him on the floor continue to display that, you know, he's made the necessary gains on the closeouts. Malik Renew, he's always been the offensive talent that he is, but having his defense step up, it only gives us more of that offense. I want to see if Trey can keep this rolling. Is he going to be just such a reliable distributor coming off the bench? Are we going to see him in that starting role? Whatever the case may be, I want to see Trey keep this distribution rolling. Indiana's defense looked a step slow and sloppy through the first through the first game and a half. And come on. I want to see this team step it up. This is the biggest non-conference game we're going to host this season in Assembly Hall, and I want this team to come out accordingly. Stop the threes. Stop the open threes. Dear God, please stop the open threes. South Carolina, one of the teams that can damage us if we leave the open threes. Please, dear God, do something to address open threes. He said. What episode is it? Started this podcast 3 years ago, episode 109, I think. He said for the 109th episode in a row. Please. Dear God, no more open threes. Lastly, I want to see a gelled team. A gelled team. Four games down, two real ones. If this is how we are building this team, like through the transfer portal, through like these top talents that make themselves available in the April before the season, like, please, if this is how we're doing it, we need to have the infrastructure in place to allow these things to fall in place and start working right away. If this is the formula we're going to be utilizing, we need to have an implementation plan that just gets these guys locked in quicker. Start hot. Let's have a full 40 in this game. Really, come on, boys. I think the Hoosiers can do it. I'm saying Hoosiers by 12 is my guess. Hoosiers by 12. If you'd like joining JR again, I said it earlier in the show, but I'm joining JR Thursday night to preview this one further, along with just six other Big Ten games for the weekend. Really great lineup we have for the weekend. So please go check the Big Ten Huddle if you haven't, if you want to see that on Thursday, same day as this releases. So thank you very much. And that was the preview for South Carolina. We'll get you on out of here with a Hoosier history hit, and then we'll send you out. Right, the Hoosier history hit this week is a bit bleak. It is a story not really known by myself prior to really digging into it, but It may be one of the worst disasters in Indiana history. On Halloween of 1963, a crowd of over 4,000 people were at the Indiana State Fair Coliseum attending a holiday ice show. Towards the end of the show, shortly after 11 p.m., a petroleum gas tank that had been leaking from the inside of the storage room in which the petroleum tanks were held, after the gas came in contact with an electrical heating element from the popcorn machine in the concession area, the supply room and the section of seats above it were decimated. After the initial blast, the damaged tanks began to explode and create more mayhem on top of that. That night, 81 Hoosiers lost their lives, 54 in the initial blast, and about 400 were injured. A grand jury indicted 7 employees and individuals involved with the arena and the logistics of the gas. The measly amount of $4.6 million, that is inflation adjusted, $47.4 million today, was paid out to the victims for restitution, whatever. Yeah. And yeah, how have I never even heard of that? I feel like an idiot for not knowing that had happened at the Indiana State Fair Coliseum. That was your bummer of a Hoosier history hit. Thank you so much for listening to the Often Daunted podcast. I have been your host, Burke White. If you can, please feel free to follow me across all socials at Often Daunted. If you haven't subscribed to the show and you'd like to, please feel free. Doesn't cost you nothing. Only helps my egos watching those numbers go up. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star review. Leave a 1-star review. Be honest. I don't make any money off this. This ain't going to change my pay. Whatever you say about the show, just want the engagement, want some say. If you have any recommendation for the show, I genuinely just want to make it better each episode. That is my goal. Each episode better than the last. If you have any recommendations, please feel free to reach out to me at oftendaunted@gmail.com. All right. Was that everything I needed to plug? Yeah. God bless you and yours, Hoosier fans. You take it easy. Lux et Veritas. Down with the Gamecocks.